it's selfish for you to tell me that I'm being selfish because I'll hurt you if I do this, because you're not compassionate enough to understand that I'm hurting.
Hey there, my name is Sean, and this is Suicide Noted. On this podcast, I talk with suicide attempt survivors so that we can hear their stories. Every year around the world, millions of people try to take their own lives, and we almost never talk about it. We certainly don't talk about it enough. And when we do talk about it, many of us, including me, we're not very good at it. So, one of my goals with this podcast is to have more conversations, and hopefully better conversations, with attempt survivors. Why? Well, in large part, to help more people in more places feel a little less shitty and a little less alone. And if you have been a part of that in the last almost 4 years, I really, really do appreciate it. If you want to support the podcast in other ways, you can rate us on Spotify or Apple. It really helps. Of course, we also have our membership, and you can learn more about that, among other things, in the show notes. And if you're a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. Hello@suicidenoted.com, on Facebook or Twitter at Suicide Noted. I should say X, not Twitter. Finally, we are talking about suicide on this podcast. We don't hold back, so please take that into account before you listen or as you listen. But I do hope you listen, because there is so much to learn. Today, I am talking with Emily. Emily lives in Michigan, and she is a suicide attempt survivor. So, Emily in Michigan, hello.
Hey.
I'd ask how are you, but, you know, I don't love that question.
Thanks, because I'll just tell you I'm shitty.
Well, I appreciate your honesty. You're not in the Upper Peninsula.
No, I'm in the Detroit area, but like suburban. You know, there's so many things in the city to do, but because I've lived outside of the city for so long, and I'm 46, like my friends who are younger, they're all up in that city, but I don't have time for that shit.
I believe the first conversation I ever had for this podcast, not necessarily the first podcast episode I released, but the first conversation may have been with Sherry in the Detroit area of Michigan.
Nice. You talk to people from everywhere. I think that's really cool.
It is. It's really cool. And I'm speaking to you in your home?
We rent a condo, so like it's really boring.
And who's the we and we?
My boyfriend and I, and then I have equal custody with my daughter's dad, and she just turned 9 January 17th, and I turned 46 the 18th.
Nice couple of days.
It was. Yeah. Last year I wasn't around because I was in the hospital for our birthdays. So
you're 46. Your daughter is the daughter?
Daughter, Gracie. She's 9.
Okay. She's 9. So you have her in your mid-30s.
Yeah, day before my 37th birthday. And if I did not have her, I probably wouldn't be here. I think that's the only thing tying me here, to be honest. Yep, I look at her and it's like, okay, gotta stick around because I can't fuck her up, right? But I just, like, I worry about how long that's going to hold until at some point, because I have had an attempt before, you just don't think about that. Because yeah, she was alive when I had my attempt. She was 5. She was in kindergarten. I just dropped her off at the bus stop and put her on the bus and went home. And yeah. So, you know, like sometimes you just don't, it doesn't matter.
What did you mean? I wasn't clear. You're saying you need to stay alive so you don't fuck her up. Was it something like that?
Yes. That's what I keep telling myself. And I think that language is coming from the fact that whenever I talk to my mom, she'll say, well, your dad and I would never forgive you if you did something like that, Emily. And what, you're just going to abandon your daughter and, you know, she'd be screwed up. You can't do that to her. Those kinds of things. I'd like to say I'm an independent person at this age, but I really still want to please my parents. I really want them to think I'm a good person and I want them to like my choices. And yeah, they only live like a couple miles away. And I've always had that. I'm a firstborn out of, there's just me and my sister Meredith. But why is it so intense that I feel that way? That kind of inner voice is going on. I can hear my mom. The abandon your daughter thing really, really bugs me.
Your sister deal with similar kinds of struggles?
She does, but she doesn't deal with it like I do. She can. Mm-hmm. She told me she could go out to her car on her lunch break, put on her sunglasses, cry, and then buck it up and go back to fucking work. Why can't I do that? And I said, I don't know.
Think your parents will hear this podcast episode?
Absolutely not. I've only told one person that I know because I really love her and respect her and we connect really well. And I wanted to tell her, and I told some random lady who did my hair, which actually she ended up really cool. And we had a lot in common. It was really kind of meant to be that she was my stylist that day. But other than that, no, I didn't want to tell anybody because I didn't want to filter what I say. And I don't want to hold back because every time I'm in different situations with different people or different therapists and psychiatrists and wherever, I feel like they just get just a little bit of it and they don't get the full, this is where I'm at, because I'm too afraid to either make them think that I'm going to come unglued or something, or I've been told that I might. I don't know. You know, like it's just time to be honest about it and stop holding back. And I don't need people in my ear or, you know, worrying about what they think, because that is my complex in life, is I worry too much about what people think.
Close friend, random hairstylist, but no one named Meredith Gracie or parents.
No, not even my boyfriend. I don't want anybody else to know.
Do you think what your parents said to you
falls under the category of nice?
No, I don't. And my dad never would say anything like that. My dad, like I said, he was in radio. My friends were always afraid of him because he never spoke a word. Like, he is the most quiet, reserved person. And the only time he will say something is when it has some weight to it or it's meaningful. My mom kind of just does a lot of the... My dad's kind of a referee between me and my mom a lot of times.
What was your dad's work?
Okay. He was on air. He was an assistant manager of a Christian radio station.
Now we're starting.
Oh, it's just the tip of the iceberg, Sean.
Now we're...
When you emailed me originally, you mentioned something about a note. Tell me more about that.
The suicide note was on Facebook. That's why I no longer have a Facebook. Don't remember if it said I just did or I am going to, but it was like happening.
Do you know why you posted that?
That whole experience is very out of body. And the minute I got really upset, it was just like everything just kind of snowballed. And then here I am doing these things that normally I would not do something like that. You know, but when I'm not well, do I put all my crap out there for everybody? Yeah. Have I had my sister confront me about why do you put your crap out there for everybody to know about? That's, you know, and I, okay.
How long did it take for you to take it down or cancel your account?
It took a while. I've canceled my account multiple times over the years. It's like reincarnating myself because I've been sober for 12 years from alcohol. And I just keep telling myself they don't want to see me then, or they won't. Yeah, no.
Is canceling the account a kind of a sign that things aren't going well? But if you have a Facebook account, we can think she's doing okay?
Maybe.
Huh.
But I'm like, I have Instagram now and I just kind of think to myself, like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't grow up with this shit. We didn't even have phones until I was like in my 20s, like cell phones. Like, what the hell? Sometimes I just delete that Instagram off my phone and just say, I don't need this crap.
When was the first time you thought about suicide?
I remember in college, more or less, which I mean, the highest floor in the dorm was like the second floor, but I was a like overwhelmed, overachieving book nerd. I went to school in Indiana, maybe 30 minutes from Indianapolis, and didn't even go to Indianapolis until my senior year because everybody would go places on the weekend and I would be like, I need to study. I'm gonna make flashcards and study this weekend.
For people who are of the younger generation, please, what is a flashcard?
Oh my gosh, they're the best. I just talked to my daughter about these. Like, you can take them all. You write on an index card like vocabulary, anything. I mean, in my British literature class, I wrote poems and I put them in the clear shower door. I'd be washing my hair and I'd be memorizing poems. It was great.
Yeah. And, you know, if you've heard any of the podcasts, you may have heard that sometimes my brain automatically is thinking as I talk and or listen, what is Emily's memoir title and or subtitle? And there's something about flashcards, maybe radio. I'm not sure yet.
I do like the smell of school supplies. That would be a good memoir title. My favorite character on SNL was Mary Catherine Gallagher.
Are you also Catholic?
I was raised Protestant and then became Catholic when I got sober. My daughter was baptized Catholic and she just did her first communion last spring.
I was about to say mazel tov, then I'm like, that's not a Catholic thing to say. The ideations or thinking about suicide starts when you're nerding out in Indiana.
It was like during final exams, right before Christmas break. And I can't handle this anymore. I want to jump out the second story window, but I didn't. That was probably the first time I thought about things because I was the good little Christian girl who didn't, you know, who wanted to do everything right. Back then, I didn't think that was right.
Up until that point, as a good little Christian girl or teenager.
Like I never had any issues. See, this is the funny thing, because when I think of like before and after me, I started having problems when I was married from the time I was like 23 to 28. And then all of my problems started. Eating disorder, cutting, mental health, all of that. When I was about 26. So before that, I was, you know, optimist of the year in high school and so positive. And my favorite book was Anne of Green Gables and everything was beautiful and romantic. And look at the world of opportunities we have. Look at this. I mean, the world is perfect.
I'm so glad you're sharing that. I'm so wondering if I ever felt that.
I can't believe I did.
Wow. And here we are.
Right.
Talking about suicide, the both
that
of
went
us.
Down the toilet.
So things were okay back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I've always had friends. I always got along with everybody and I always had things I liked to do. I was good in school and I always had great opportunities and did some really cool things. But
college?
It's interesting because I have done a lot of thinking about that. And I was public schooled my entire life. I applied for some colleges. I just wanted the out of state experience. I wanted to move away from home and the whole thing. And I got a scholarship, an academic scholarship. It was a school that somebody in my youth group at church or something went to, very small Christian liberal arts college. And all of a sudden, I thought I was this great person. Like I really thought I had like good character and I beliefs. And then I go to this Christian college and there's these people whose parents are pastors and missionaries. And I say a bad word and they like about have a heart attack and make me feel like an idiot. And I became very angsty and angry and mad about I'm trying to be something I'm not. Like I had to sign a community agreement saying I wouldn't dance. I wouldn't watch rated R movies. I wouldn't drink when I'm like, everybody here's doing it. Are you guys fucking nuts? Like, why would you tell somebody who was 18, 19, 20, 21? That's unrealistic. Anyway, and I was not breaking the rules. And I didn't even start drinking until after I was 21. And now I wish that I would have. I wish that I would have gotten that out of my system in high school and college. I wish.
Because yes, you have mentioned you've been sober, which suggests there was a period of time in which you were probably drinking a lot.
10 years. I mean, I stopped when I was 33.
Well, congrats on that, for real, figuring that
it's
out.
Not easy. That's
really, no.
The other day, I was just driving down the road, and I'm like, you know how easy it would be right now to go to the liquor store?
Ah, so easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Gas station, liquor store, supermarket, restaurants, friends have liquor cabinets. It's everywhere.
And because of the way that I am, the depression and the anxiety, even from the beginning, that was a tool to self-medicate and to escape and to numb out. So now that I'm here and I'm still struggling with these issues, I keep thinking to myself, I cannot believe I haven't relapsed yet.
The sober part in many ways, I imagine, is more challenging than the non-sober part.
Let me go back to college for a sec.
What stops you from jumping, even though you probably would not have died? Do you remember?
I think I always had inside me this like risk-taking, like I want to do like rebellious things and be a risk taker and do these extreme things, but I'd always reel it back in. I had that self-control, you know, and again, like, what would people think?
You've already sort of painted a nice picture for us of what some of school was like for you, but how often are you thinking about windows or other methods?
I think I just always would like try to visualize, like, you know, when you were a kid and you were driving in the car, you know, going to New York to visit grandma and grandpa, you would eventually you would get there and you'd look back and that trip was just a memory, right? So I hate this. I hate studying for these exams and writing 15-page papers and doing, and I procrastinate and write a 15-page paper overnight. I'd call my mom in tears and she'd hang up on me and be like, you did this to yourself. And I'd still end up with the A on the paper, but I was a mess. But I'd always just tell myself, it'll be over and then this will be a memory and you'll be fine. I had that kind of ability to like have that mindset, but not anymore.
So do you meet your future ex-husband in college?
Yes, when I was in college, I was a lifeguard at the YMCA. I was a swimmer in high school just for a year, but I liked it. I was good at it. And so I became a lifeguard in college and we were teaching preschool swim lessons together. And I don't even know, Sean. Day of my wedding, my mom reminded me that she looked at me and said, you remember your favorite movie with Julia Roberts, Emily? Like, just please go. Please, I'll tell everybody. Just go. Just drive away.
What's the movie?
Runaway Bride. But I was so worried about what people think. I didn't even like this person.
Wait a second.
But everybody that I went to school with that was in my circle had gotten married the year prior. As soon as we graduated, I taught my first year of teaching. I taught fifth grade and then I got married. And I thought to myself, I'm never going to meet anybody ever again. I'm never going to, you know.
So your mom says that.
Yeah. I mean, the only consolation I had, my grandma, the New York grandma, she came up to me and said, there's $300 in your wedding. Take that out and put it in your pocket. And on your honeymoon, you go shopping and you spend that on yourself. And that was the only thing getting me through that day because I just wanted that fucking $300. I didn't care about my hair. It was awful and they messed up and I didn't care. I didn't care about my dress. I didn't care about any of it. Afterward, like a couple months later, a couple of mom and dad's church were like, you were the saddest bride.
Can that be the memoir title, please? The saddest bride.
That's perfect. He ended up, when he was in college, he studied ministry. So he became a pastor, Sean. I was a fucking pastor boy. You know what I was doing? I was smoking cigarettes behind the parsonage under a bush. It was nuts. Pastor's wife? Are you fucking, what?
Well, you lasted for 5 years.
No. For the first three, we were there. It was a country church up in mid-Michigan. Half these people were related and farmers. It was a very small place. And toward the end of that, I was working for a small college up there as an admissions representative, Alma College. Toward the end of that, I basically begged him to leave. I said, you've got to leave because there is an old lady in that church and I'm going to fucking burn her house down. I hate her. He's like, oh no. And I was like, yeah. So I ended up checking myself into a place. She was some like 80 some year old lady and she always had something to say to me. If I was wearing pants, that wasn't good enough. If I was wearing a dress, then why wasn't I wearing pants? And why did I say this? And she'd drive by the house and she'd call and ask him why I wasn't home. All these weird things. And I just couldn't take it anymore. She'd interrupt his sermon. It was just so weird. I said, I can't do this anymore. Like, I hate it here. And my mental health is so bad. Like, we need to leave this place. Like, I can't be this. I can't do this. Like, you need to leave your job. I'm sorry. So he became some appliance delivery guy. And then he ended up taking like cash advances out of my paycheck and going to strip clubs. Oh, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. So what are the signs for you that you are, I don't know if this is sort of like years later upon reflection or discovery in therapy kind of thing, but like, what were the signs that your mental health wasn't well?
I was drinking and then I got like manic-y and they said that I had bipolar disorder, but I wasn't sober then. So I don't quite agree with that. I was just all over the place. On top of being so calling my mom while I'm traveling for work and saying I'm behind a semi truck and I just want to ram into it and I fucking hate my life and I hate everything. And
at some point during here is where we kick back into ideating.
Yes. This is where it all starts and it doesn't stop.
So I know you've already shared that that marriage does not work out.
No. I was in the hospital and I told the nurse, if he comes up here, please, I'm not going to talk to him. He ended up moving out when I came home from the hospital, like most of the furniture and things were gone.
So I know you were not doing well. Some people do the whole white knuckling thing. Mm-hmm. Probably most, actually.
I've admitted myself. I've had like 20 inpatient hospitalizations and all of them have been voluntary.
Oh.
Maybe a couple. Well, because after the attempt, no, that wasn't voluntary. And my first one when I was the lady thing, voicing those thoughts. But no, I didn't trust myself.
Would you go back to the same hospital over and over again?
No. I've been to so many. I could probably be like some like recruitment officer for the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, you were an admissions officer in your former job.
Yeah.
How big of a step is it to just go to a recruitment officer?
Yeah, right. They're all horrible. I don't know why I do it. You know, I don't know why I get to that point and then ask for help. But I know asking for help is the right thing to do at the time. But you're there and it's a big joke.
Right. Well, I mean, what we really need is a place where people can go that need help. And it's not a joke.
Right. There were some staff here and there that were very good. Even in the ones that the majority weren't. You know, there were some that were very kind, and a lot of them happened to be more of the support staff, not the professional staff or whatever,
right.
Like the doctors and the nurses.
What did they do? How were they different?
The people that are there for the right reasons, a lot of those people that are working as just doing the daily, you know, checking people in, getting them places to group, to whatever, making sure you're waking up, that kind of stuff. They're the ones knee deep in it with you. They're the ones with you all day long. And the ones that really care, I'm sure they don't make a lot of money. So it's not for the money. And they actually love people. Look me in the eye and tell me with tears in their eyes, you know, I've experienced this, or I have a family member who has, and you can do this. And, you know, I care about you and you're going to get through this and let's just get through this day, you know. But some of the doctors with the medication stuff, listen, I'm a smart person. Stop talking to me like I'm not a functioning human being. You're telling me if I take this medicine today, 12 hours from now, I'm going to feel better. You're telling me that, and that's not true. So then when they don't listen to that, then you just play along. Oh my gosh, you're right.
If you push back at all, then it's almost always worse. So you're just like, I don't have the energy for this shit. And I'm basically want to get out of here. So you just do what you got to do.
I mean, if you're really not safe, the whole point is just to keep you safe. I get that. But at least give people some dignity. And
so when you get out of the hospital, the woman's house has not been burned down.
No, and everything's okay.
Everything's okay. And your husband's gone. And at some point you get a divorce, I imagine.
No, the husband's still there. We just left the church.
At some point it ends. And that was when you were after another hospitalization, say when you came back and the stuff was gone?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I know moving forward, you shared with me that there are many hospital stays or visits.
And most of that time you're drinking probably a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of booze did you drink?
I was a binge drinker and I was just kind of like whatever was there. But I really liked Jaeger and Bud Light. Not to get like not mixed.
Who are you drinking with?
Toward the end there right before I got sober. Oh, I just go on match.com and meet drinking buddies and just hang out with dudes to drink. So funny. Like, yeah. No. Yeah. That was so useful.
Did you end up doing a 12-step?
I mean, I was trying to get sober for years before I actually did. I did go up until Gracie was born, and then I get a lot of shit about that, but there's multiple ways to recovery. And I also don't really believe in a God anymore.
Sounds like you get shit for a lot of things, actually, from what you share.
Oh, yeah, probably. Or I give myself it.
There is shit flowing around you. You feel that you're right.
Yeah.
How old were you when you attempt?
This was March 1st, 2021.
When you're divorced, you are, what year is that?
2006.
Okay, so we have 15 years. Are you mostly living alone?
Yep, and trying to hold a job, which for some reason, when the mental health got really, really bad, it's just like, I would know and I would resign. I would just say, you know, I don't want to get fired.
What's happening where you're like, uh-oh?
I get so anxious. Like I don't want to get up. Like mm-hmm. I can't even put my feet on the floor. You know, like I can't envision myself even getting up and getting ready to go. So depressed. I can't get out of bed. Crying a lot. I just had to take one of those PHQ-9 assessment tools that they do at the doctor, the depression screen, where they ask you like every basically symptom of depression. And then you basically score yourself. And if it's 20 or higher, you're severely depressed and you need to seek help because you're suicidal. Mine was like a 25 or 26.
So you're suicidal for years.
Yeah.
But you don't try.
No, I was, I don't know. I was always, I felt like I don't have the balls to do this. I'm too scared. I don't know.
You're mostly living alone, but are you basically going through all of this alone? Meaning you've got a family, you may have some friends. I don't know. You'll tell me. You have some coworkers at some points, maybe dating. Do you reveal to people? Yeah, some people are going to notice you're not doing well, but are you doing this essentially alone? You're waking up, you can't put your feet on the floor, you're depressed, you're crying, and there's no one to talk to.
I've always felt, even though like maybe I felt like sometimes my family might not fully understand. Like I might sometimes get like, oh, Emily, you're wallowing. Come on, get out of bed. You know, you need to get out of bed. But I have lived by myself since college. And then when I got sober, I lived with my parents for a couple of years. Like right now I'm living with my boyfriend. I haven't lived with somebody since, I don't even know, since Gracie was born. The last 6 years I've lived alone. And so I'm having a hard time with this.
So what year is Gracie born?
Gracie's 2015.
And that was just a partner at the time?
Somebody I knew from AA, like between meetings or whatever, go out and have a cigarette kind of person, you know? And then all of a sudden, yeah, let's date. Right. 2 months later, I get pregnant. All this time when I was drinking and having all sorts of behavior that goes along with drinking. Never once did I get pregnant. Here I am.
Do you like being mom?
Yeah, I do. My degree is in elementary education. I've always liked kids. Let me tell you what, I can handle a whole classroom of children. My one child, I swear I'm going to fucking lose my mind. So it's totally different when they're yours. And it's hard work, but I do love it. I do. I really feel like that's the only thing I'm proud of in my life now. It used to be, you know, my college degree or whatever, but
getting sober.
Oh, yeah, that used to be something I was proud of, too. But I mean, yeah, I'm proud of that, I guess. But I think Gracie is, I always worry, you know, what if something happened to her? I don't think I'd be all right.
March 1st, 2021. Was there a reason it was that day?
No. The reason why I felt like, I feel like it was like this superhuman, like, I can do anything. I'm going to do this today. I was having some issues. They were thinking about doing like some hysterectomy or something. But before that, they wanted me to try hormones stuff. I wasn't doing too well with that. And so I ended up in the ER and then ended up following up with the doctor. And then they give me progesterone. And I called, that was a Tuesday. On a Friday, I call and I said, my depression and anxiety have been pretty much under control. And I am having the darkest thoughts, like I'm not okay. And she said, okay, let me call the doctor. He prescribed me a different brand. That was a Saturday. Monday, I drop Gracie off at school or at the bus. I blow off work. I feel kind of like almost flabbergasted myself. Like sometimes I'm just like, holy shit, like this is something I've always wanted to do and I did it. And I even went back and this fall, I went to that hospital and got the records because I don't remember showing up at the ER. I don't remember what happened or what they did. I didn't know. And they like have quotes of me saying, I just wanted to die and I never had the balls to do it. And now I did.
What exactly did you do?
I took 140 pills. I had my antidepressant and a mood stabilizer that's also used for like migraine headaches. And I took 70 of one and 70 of another and just by the handful.
Where were you? Were you home?
Yeah, I was at home and I laid down in bed and I kind of tossed my phone to the other side of the bed and I could hear it just blowing up because people read that on Facebook, what I wrote. And
You had just posted it like earlier that day.
No, I posted it while it was happening.
Wow. Okay.
It was just like all autopilot. I was just all upset and all, it just was all happening. And I didn't think anything. I didn't think like what happens after you die.
Yeah.
I didn't think maybe I'm going to have a seizure or maybe I'll have like cardiac arrest or maybe nothing. I don't know. Now that I think of it, I probably should have drank with that and that would have done the deed right there. But wasn't thinking, you know, but I wasn't thinking about anything. I wasn't thinking about anybody or anything. I just wanted it all to go away. And I finally had this, whatever those hormones did in my body, it just tipped me right over just enough to do what I've always wanted to do.
How do you go from taking the pills, posting on Facebook to getting into an ER?
Because my work supervisor and work friends, I was a recovery coach at the time at a nonprofit. They saw it. And then I had some friends. I used to be really into fitness and stuff and did like beach body coaching. And a bunch of my girls from the team, they all started blowing up 911. And so before you know it, like three or four police officers are standing in my bedroom by my bed. And they're like, Emily.
Oh, did they break in?
I must have left the door open, the unlocked.
Were they kind with you?
They're really kind. Actually, my sister's ex is a police officer for the city I live in. So he actually responded, but he stayed downstairs and let the other guys go up because he was afraid to embarrass me. They all showed up and the ambulance showed up and they even, you know, got me to walk down the stairs and the hospital was literally like a mile away. And I don't remember anything. I remember getting in the ambulance and then that's it. I don't remember anything.
And then you wake up at some point when?
I wake up on some cardiac unit.
How many days later?
I have no idea.
Nothing.
Then what happens?
They sent me out to a psych unit. Yeah.
How long were you there for? Do you remember?
I think it was at the actual hospital from like the first through the fourth and then over at the psych unit from like the fourth through the 12th. Then I was home for like 10 days and then got COVID.
Oh,
and then
what
had
great
to isolate upstairs in my apartment, not see my daughter or anybody. And I was so sick for like 2 weeks right after a suicide attempt. I was all by myself.
So given that your phone was blowing up and the police came and you were in two hospitals and then all this. So there are some people that know that you tried to end your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But you've not gone on social media or elsewhere to let the world know.
Not anymore. No.
Until today.
Yeah. One of the things is I have a psychologist that I see. I looked over at his notes and it said that I was obsessed with death, but I was afraid to die. And I was suicidal constantly. To like an average person, they'd probably be like, what the fuck is that about?
Sure.
You know, but I read obituaries like constantly. I'm so up on the obituaries, like somebody's up on current events, like probably don't need to read them for a couple of days because I know. And I'll try to identify who you can tell. One of my favorite shows is 6 Feet Under. Kind of morbid sense of humor, kind of like into that kind of. But then I just one day was just like, I feel like I need to hear like either somebody talking about what they did because I need to know. Like, I just want to hear somebody talking about it because I'm just so obsessed right now and I'm ideating all the time. Or also like, here's the duality again. I'm so tired of feeling like I'm all by myself, constantly thinking about these, like riddled with these thoughts. And I just typed in the search bar, Apple Podcasts, like suicide, and yours came up. That was it. And then I just kept listening and listening and listening and listening.
Go technology. Here we go.
I know.
So there's something about hearing other people talk about it that did something, for lack of a better word, positive or something worked.
It did. Because a lot of times I'll hear people say something and I'll be like, oh my God, like I've never heard somebody say it like that. And that's exactly what I've thought, you know, and unless you've thought these things, nobody gets it. And you just are out here. Just people just think like you're weird or.
What's it like to attempt to take your life as you did in March 1st, 2021 and still be alive, whether it's the moment you realize that it did work or up until today? What is that like?
I every day kind of like wish that I kind of like revise things in my head, like, okay, well, next time I'm not going to do that and I'm not going to do this and they're not going to know when I'm going to go into the woods somewhere where no one can find me or whatever, you know, because I've had like one of my neighbors a long time ago looked at me and said, you know, you just did that for attention.
No, I didn't. Sure. That was almost 3 years ago. Well, very close to almost 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And then you read books like this, Waking Up Alive, The Descent, The Suicide Attempt, and The Return to Life. And I thought, oh, that's going to be a really interesting book because it was supposed to like give hope, like, oh my God, your whole world changed like for the better. And then I read and some people's worlds really did change for the better. Mine didn't burst my bubble. I wanted to hear somebody tell me like, it still sucks.
That type of stuff is hard to find. You hear much more as it's okay. It turned out okay. Here are some examples. People are thriving. They're living with it. They're putting passion to their pain or you know, all that stuff is really common. In the almost 3 years since your attempt, it sounds like you often think about it.
All the time. There might be a reprieve, like especially living where I live, like in the winter, it gets really, really bad. Sometimes in the summer, I mean, Gracie and I like to be at the pool a lot and we like to be outside a lot in the summer, but and that's nice because there's less sun and I like to be outdoors and I like to be in the water. But then when it's winter and it's dark and it's depressing and cold and I don't do well. And then there are sometimes in the summer that I don't do well too, but I'll get a little reprieve. And then we're right back to this default of depression. And it's like an all day and you're just, it's exhausting. I don't think people understand that you're pushing these thoughts away. And I've had like, even therapists say, well, just don't think that.
God.
Or just
come on, Emily. Don't
get
think
off,
about it.
You know, get off the couch and go for a walk. You'll feel so much better.
This is from a therapist.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I know, but I'm so depressed, like that I've gained so much weight that it's triggering the depression that it's the vicious cycle and I just can't, I don't have the motivation. That's one of the symptoms of depression and I'm withdrawing and I don't want people to see me like this, not even walking down around the block. Like I feel like I don't like myself. I don't want people to see me like this. This is not my best self. I don't want, you know, and so no, I can't get myself up off the couch. No,
right.
Well, just try harder.
Oh God. Yeah. Cause you're not trying.
Right. I'm not trying at all.
So it sounds like you've had several therapists over the years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a really good one right now, though. He's great.
Okay. This therapist or perhaps other ones ever give you or diagnose you with something you agree with?
Major depression and anxiety. The bipolar, I think, is up for it. They say bipolar depression. I kind of think that's kind of up in the air. And then recently somebody said borderline, but I've done DBT. Like I've done the group like for a year and I really enjoyed it. But even that, like if you're to me, like I'm like those skills are very useful and I really enjoyed that. But when you're really bad, like I don't know what to say. So, but I don't know if they just said like all of a sudden they just were like, oh, she's thinking about suicide all the time. So she must be borderline.
In those groups or current therapists or past therapists, do you ever tell them that you're suicidal? Does that ever come out?
All the time.
Okay. So, and they don't immediately send you somewhere. They can talk and listen.
No. My therapist is always like, you know, Emily, it's a thought. If it gets intense and you feel like you need help, you know what to do. And I'm like, yeah, but my problem is if I'm right on the edge like that, I'm not going to call you.
Do you ever wish that March 1st, 2021 turned out differently?
Yep.
Is that a thought you have somewhat regularly?
Yes, because at this point it would have been 3 years. Maybe my family would have healed a little bit and, people would go on with their lives and my kid could have some more normalcy with life without me. And I just would be done. I just want after death to be nothing. I'm so tired. I just want it to be done.
With your prior beliefs, do you think you would be in heaven or hell or somewhere else?
I know. I don't think there's a hell. I think hell's right here. I'm living it right here.
So you're living it with Gracie and your boyfriend. Does Gracie know about what happened?
Oh, God, no. She knew I was in the hospital and she was kind of anxious. And she asked her dad a lot, like, is mommy okay? And she thought I had a bellyache. And she her daddy told her that my head hurt and I needed to go to the hospital so that my head felt better. But no, I mean, I think I worry sometimes she picks up on this depression. I don't know. I put her in therapy. We put her in therapy last spring and she's doing really good. She's just a highly sensitive person like I am. She feels a lot. And I just, I just want her to have the skills. She's very emotionally intelligent. It's just, she has a hard time regulating.
Yeah. Do you think at some point, if you're alive, let's just say that you would ever tell her?
I don't know. I mean, I think like if she's older, like a teenager or something, and I'm sure these things are going to come up and they'll be talking about these things, then maybe. I mean, I'm not going to say that that's going to be the only one because I worry about the statistics. You know, you look at the statistics, it's not favorable.
So right now you are, do you work now?
No, that's another thing that bums me out, but I ended up applying for Social Security disability. So right now I'm just kind of trying to, I haven't really been the same since that attempt and it just not, I don't know what it is. So I'm trying to give myself some time to like really hit it hard with therapy. And I also started neuromodulation, neurotherapy. It's interesting. I don't know if it's working. And they look at your brain waves and like he does a QEEG and he looks at measures the different brain waves. And then they do a brain map and they show on your brain map, like which parts of your brain that my friend Nicole and I call it brain training. And then they take like little things on this cap while you're sitting there doing psychotherapy with a psychologist. And it's just, I don't even know how he explained it. It's like an electric current almost, but not.
Do you take meds?
Yeah.
How many different meds do you take?
4 or 5.
I don't know how this works exactly. Maybe it's state by state, but given that you overdosed, does that affect either which kind of meds and or the amount they'll give you in a period of time?
Yeah, she only gives me 12 at a time. And that's still going on. Nothing is working. I mean, we keep trying and trying different things. I've tried basically everything. I honestly told her just the other day, fuck it, like go start paperwork for ECT at this point. Like,
so I guess I'm thinking about all this as you've shared this and I'm wondering, how is it that you stayed alive?
I do too. And you know, people out there would be like, oh my God, it's a miracle.
Maybe.
You know, like the whole toxic positivity. There's a reason for everything.
I like these voices.
Do you love it?
I love when people go into a little quick mini character. Yes.
Oh my God. But my thing is I know like there's so much out there, Sean. I mean, I'm sure you know this. There are websites, there are forums, formulas, and things to know. I basically narrowed it down.
We're talking method now?
Yeah. If I'm going to do something, I know how I would like to do it.
Probably like other people I've talked to recently, and it's the thing, and it's online, and it's painless, and you have to buy something and put it over your face.
No, you know, it's not that, because I've read some mixed things about that it's not entirely painless.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And the guy got busted for selling that stuff.
Yes. Well, how would you do it?
Honestly, because, okay, it's not true. I do think about maybe kind of sometimes like who might find me, right?
Yeah.
Not too long ago, somebody over the summer, you could see it in the like in the CCTV footage on the news. They were driving their car so fast. It was like 95 miles per hour around this corner and they hit the county building, like slammed into this marble building and the car just inflamed. Like they had to identify them by their teeth. And I kept saying that was for sure a suicide. There is no way in hell, because there is a light like literally 20 feet from there.
Well, also you just look for brake marks, right?
Yeah, there wasn't any. No.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a surefire way to do it.
Okay.
I've looked into the gun thing. I hate guns, but I've looked into the gun thing. I know that would work. I don't want to apply for all that shit. Like I would want to go like black market and go some alley behind a dumpster and ask somebody buy one or something.
Do you think about when exactly?
That's what my psychiatrist always asks me every single...
Yeah, well, that's what they have to ask. That's why I didn't want to ask it, because I don't want to sound like a psychiatrist.
Yeah, she's like, you're suicidal right now? Like, yeah. like, do you have a plan? Yeah, a plan. And I was like, I have a method. I don't have a day and a time.
Right.
Okay, but you know what to do. And I was like, Yeah. Like, who's right. going to do that? But then I have admitted myself so many times because I was scared. So who's to say?
Who's to say? Yeah. And actually, I think, I don't know how it works for sure, but as far as I understand it, imminent risk is within, I believe, 48 hours. So if your plan is next month, I think that's very different than if it's tomorrow in terms of like communicating with someone who has the power to, and I was going to say incarcerate you. And then I'm like, no, she's not going to jail. But then I thought, yeah, spend some time in those hospitals. It's kind of an incarceration.
Pretty much.
How many people can you count on either hand that you, when you're going through a really hard time, and I know just from what we've talked about, this is often can talk to and not feel shitty about it and actually maybe even feel better about it.
I mean, I had people, but like, again, like I said, like, I feel like I'm always holding myself back and not, I don't want to scare people and I don't want to.
I'm not asking if those people exist. I'm asking you if you do indeed talk to them about it, whatever your reasons are.
I feel like people get bits and pieces of what it is, but I'm afraid to give them the whole thing because I'm afraid they're seriously going to fall over.
And this includes your current partner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does he know about everything, the past?
Yeah. We weren't together then.
Is there anything, how do you get through the day? Does anything even give you a little moment of relief?
Sometimes I catch myself holding my breath a lot or gritting my teeth a lot, you know, like I have to remind myself to breathe. I like to write. And when I'm really depressed, like I don't do things that I used to find pleasure in doing, but writing really is helpful for me. And reading books, I have a whole bookshelf of books, but you know, can I do that when I'm not doing well? I don't know. But when my daughter's home, I feel like I do really well. When she goes to her dad's half the time, I feel like I fall apart. So if I have her to focus on, then I do, like, I can, yeah.
This is probably kind of random. And why the change from Christianity to Catholicism and then to no religion?
Oh my God. I was raised in this and then the marriage and spattered in my lifetime, just a lot of shitty people in the church. And I've had a lot of people say, well, don't let that reflect on God or whatever. But I'm sorry, I'm ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater at this point because I've done, there's a term called deconstruction. I've deconstructed the whole thing. I've taken it all apart and I've looked at it and I've decided it's not for me. And mainly because I'm big on like human rights, social justice, LGBTQ plus rights, women's rights, civil rights. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the evangelical church just doesn't align with a lot of that stuff. I believe that you vote with your feet. And if I'm going to stand someplace that doesn't align with my values, I'm basically telling them that I agree with them and I don't. So I can't do it. I cannot fucking do it. I cannot fucking stand with people who use whatever their religion is for oppression.
That includes Catholicism?
All of it. Yeah. I feel like my little girl, she's going to catechism tonight. She loves it. Like she literally comes home from school and on the back of her classwork, she's like, Mommy, look, I drew Jesus on the cross. And I'm like,
whoa.
Oh. Or she like writes like the Our Father on the back of her paperwork. Or she like draws a picture of nature and she writes God's creation. And I was like, what? And she's like, God's creation. I was like, oh, God's creation. I have a feeling at this point she might turn into a nun with an atheist mother. Who knows?
So just to be clear, you were Catholic when she was born.
Her dad, too. Her dad's
okay.
Catholic.
Got it. But she knows you're not.
No.
She thinks you are.
Yeah. I mean, I just try to support her and her stuff. She's just super cute. And she talks about this stuff all the time. And I'm just like, you know, until it gets to like scary, like indoctrinating stuff, then I'm going to step in. But if she, like her little beautiful spirit wants to whatever, talk about Mary all you want. You know, she came home when she was in kindergarten with this picture. They had to draw like a face on this picture of this little face with like a little girl with hair in a winter hat. And then I said, oh, what's her name? And she goes, oh, that's Mary, Jesus's mom. we go to the park and she swings on a swing with the kid and it's around Easter time. And she's like, did you know that Jesus died for your sins? I'm like, oh, Lord, God, no. But she really is pure about it. It's really cute. So whatever.
I mean, she's got the right name for it.
Yeah. But all this stuff right now, like, you know, the world is a heavy place. And I think that contributes when you're a person who is kind of an empath and sensitive and feels everything and cares about it all and cares about everybody and the well-being, you know, just a humanitarian at heart. Like, how can you not like feel it all? If I'm not the death of me, I feel like just caring so much about, like I always tell people, I fucking hate people. I just hate ignorant, stupid people, you know? So I've been really, really like raw about that lately.
Do you have any myths or misconceptions about any of the stuff that haven't already sort of come up that you want to discuss or dispel?
I think people think that it's just like, it's only depressed people or it's only a certain age bracket or it's only like people don't care, like the person who's attempting or completing suicide, they don't care about anybody else. Okay. You know, no, that's not true. And the whole selfish thing really bothers me because somebody said on one of your podcasts that really resonated with me is it's selfish for you to tell me that I'm being selfish because I'll hurt you if I do this, because you're not compassionate enough to understand that I'm hurting. And I'm not saying like somebody just to like hold my hand and be like, go ahead, kill yourself. But like, so many times you just say like, I'm having these thoughts or I'm really struggling and people just want to jump and fix it. And instead, I just wish somebody would just look at you and say, I am so sorry you're struggling. That really sucks. That really sucks. And I'll just sit here. I'm your friend. I'm not going anywhere. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, those people seem unfortunately rather uncommon or rare to find. There are not many out there. I've, in my experience.
Mm-mm. All right, Emily, I know you know about the pink and purple pill question. You've probably been waiting for it.
I give Emily a pill. It happens to be pink and purple. She takes it. She goes to sleep. It's painless. She dies. Nobody knows. It's a suicide. It's just she died in her sleep, as does sometimes happen. Do you take it?
Yep.
Don't put it in the drawer behind you, but next to your bed, and just save it for maybe another day.
No, I think that I thought about this a lot. You know, I thought, man, you know, if I got like a terminal illness or something, like maybe that would like hit me over the head and like knock some sense into me or something. And then I'd appreciate life more or something. But honest to God, I really think, especially if they thought it was an accident.
This part of me, I don't think I've ever done this, but you were active about sending me those notes. It's three photos or screenshots. It's long. Do you want to read the whole thing or part of it? How do you want to do it? And just to remind people, this is going back now, like almost 3 years ago, you wrote a note, posted it on Facebook at some point, took it down, even deleted Facebook.
A lot of people saw this. A lot of people saw this. And that's how they got me help or whatever. And honestly, I mean, this was up for a good 2 weeks because I was in the hospital.
Right.
I'll read it.
Well,
okay.
Listen to your suicide note. And I don't think we've ever done this.
Okay. I've never read it out loud. So we'll see how I do. I was such a good person early in my life. I did everything right. I really did. Then something happened and I broke. I don't know if it was my marriage in my early 20s or what, but I fell apart. I started drinking and hurting myself and developed an eating disorder. I became depressed and always thought about wanting to die. I never fully recovered from that. Never. I've been sober 9 years and that's a big deal, but I still feel like a fuck up. I still struggle with depression. I still lose weight and gain weight. My greatest accomplishment before Gracie was my college degree. Fuck that now. My greatest accomplishment ever in my entire life is my precious girl, and I still failed her. I can't go on. I have proved over and over again that I cannot handle my life. I am too emotional. I'm too sensitive. I'm too loving and giving, and I feel too much. I get way too overwhelmed, but honestly, I don't feel like a good person, and I just want to go. Gracie has the best dad ever. She is so much better with him. He does such a good job. I admire him a lot. Dave, I hope you know that. I know we didn't work out as a couple, but that we parented so well together for her meant so much to me. I'm going to break her heart. My heart is breaking thinking about this. Some of you are going to hate me for this, but in so much pain. I just need to go. I put her on the bus and now I just want to hold her one more time. What is wrong with me? Something has always been wrong with me. And I put like 5 exclamation points. I love my sister so much and I wish I could spend every day with her, but we were always too busy and I always felt like I fucked up that relationship too. My parents gave me so much more than I deserve and I feel like I aged them. I love you, Mom and Dad, so much. They worried about me for years. Now I will break them. My mom doesn't understand depression. It's real, Mom. See, I'm really done. It's time. These hormones that I've been on have finally made me crazy enough to push me over the edge and help me do what I've always wanted to do all these years, but never had the guts to do. I took all my pills in my cupboard. I'm going to lay down and go to sleep. I'm so sad. I'm so stupid. I'm such a bad person. I wanted to be better. I wanted to hold my baby one more time, and now I'm breaking her heart. I'm such a terrible person.
Mm.
Yeah.
What I find interesting, and I hate to sound clinical, is it's so logical.
I know.
It's not a quote-unquote crazed person. It's not, you know, it's just somebody who's had enough. And yes, there are some chemicals tracing through your body that are not helping.
Somebody reached out to me last week, Sean, that basically asked me to come back to church because I've been battling my depression for 20 years and it's time to put it to rest and claim victory over it. And I deserve it. And I just railed right in and said, excuse me?
Mm. What I want to know, and I don't think you have access to this because you deleted your account. Weirdly, I want to know, did anybody comment on that? Do you remember?
Oh, a lot of people did. And they were all very kind. There was one person I thought they didn't like me because they were president of the senior class when I was in high school. The only reunion I've ever gone to was the 10-year reunion. Well, that was right after my divorce. Like, I was divorced. The divorce is final November 1st, 2006, and it was Thanksgiving weekend. I got trashed. I was trashed. I was so trashed. They literally had to walk me over to my friend's house. Somebody had to drive me to my parents' house because I didn't live with my parents. I lived up north. Then somebody else had to drive my car back. And they were holding me on either side. I was going up to all the popular guys in high school and saying some really embarrassing things. Hey, Andy, guess what? You'd be like, hey, I'm what? I got my titties pierced. That's what I was doing, this shit, smoking a cigarette, drinking. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, these were the people that were so popular. And I'm like over here falling apart. And I never got invited back. And I thought, this person doesn't like me. Well, she was so kind and sent me something in the mail for Gracie and a card. And I was like, what?
All right. So for all the negative stuff we hear, sometimes even a space like Facebook, there can be some positive things.
Yeah, there can be.
But you still deleted that shit.
I guess I can't be trusted.
Your parents and sister, your nuclear family, they know about your attempt.
Mm-hmm.
They know about the note.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're 3 different people. They're not one entity. What did they say?
I feel like it woke them up a little bit. I feel like they've been more sensitive toward all of this, my struggles with depression and stuff since then. I mean, they're very supportive. I know I'm loved and I know they'll do anything for me. I mean, I know this. But sometimes when you're really struggling, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just too sensitive. Maybe I'm just a fucking pussy. I don't know. But like, somebody just comes up to you and says, like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, like, stop wallowing, get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can go out to the car and cry and then go back to work. Why can't you do that? What's wrong with you?
I don't know how many people are listening to this or will listen to this. I am so sure that so many of them get where you're coming from with that, among other things you've shared. But what you just said, man, it's like so true.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the main reasons why I do the podcast, so that people feel like, all right, you know, I'm probably never going to meet Emily in suburban Detroit, but she's out there and she's struggling too. What are the odds you are going to die a natural death?
I've always known for like 15, 20 years, I just have this idea that I'm not going to die a natural death. So I don't think the odds are not ever in my favor.
Yeah. Although the Detroit Lions almost made the damn Super Bowl, so miracles can happen.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy to tell people what to do, but sometimes miraculous things
they do
changes, yeah.
And like maybe something, like there's always a small particle of sand bit of me that is kind of like, maybe this will be the year. Maybe this will be the month. Maybe this will be the time that this all goes away. Or I figure something out. Maybe I need to try ketamine or microdose. I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know, but there's got to be something that will help. Like, am I completely, like, is this completely beyond me? Like, am I just, because at this point, that's what I feel, but maybe it's not the case. Maybe there is something. I don't know.
Anything else you'd like to share before we get back to our scintillating lives?
You know, I've been really looking forward to this today. And the ability to talk to you, like I showed my friend who I told about today, I shared your website with her. She's like, oh, this is so cool, Emily. You know, like I was very nervous, but excited because I don't talk about it like this. I don't get to just like no holds barred. Just here we are. This is it. This is me. This is what I think and feel. And this is what I've been through. And you know, and you're not going to just get little pieces that might fit so that you don't get offended on my account, you know, and I'm sitting over here dying inside, but I'm making you feel better about yourself. Finally, I can just let it out and tell people what it's like. And then this has really helped me a lot. It's really helped me. There have been so many people's stories. The way that you just create a conversation with people, it just flows naturally. And the people's stories that I've heard are just all, everybody says something that helps every single episode that I've listened to.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that. And I appreciate you saying those kind words.
I mean, it was such an occasion today. I was so happy to like put on makeup and do my hair and wow. You know, I don't look like a depressed person today because I like had something purposeful to do. And sometimes it's about that. And I think like maybe I need to volunteer.
Well, I appreciate you doing it and being open and brave and talking. So
I think you're brave because I know why you do what you do because I read why, your reason why. And the fact that you just hear so much. Well, you struggle with some of this too, and you've experienced it with a friend. And this is just a heavy topic, but you're so brave to just tap into it unfiltered.
Yeah. Thanks. I try.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Wishing you well.
Hey, you too. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Have a good day. Bye.
Take care. You too. Bye.
As always, thanks so much for listening and all of your support. Special thanks to Emily up in Michigan. Thank you, Emily. If you are a suicide attempt survivor and you'd like to talk, please reach out. Hello@suicidenoted.com. on Facebook or X at Suicide Noted. A friendly reminder to rate and review the Suicide Noted podcast. It helps people find it, and of course we want more people to find it. And that is all for episode number 207. Stay strong, do the best you can. I will talk to you soon.